Okay, so we're about to embark upon the sugyas of Dal Minim. See if we can get done in the next week or two. So the Torah tells us in Parshas Emor, there's a mitzvah, of course, on the first day of Sukkot to take the Dal Minim. So we'll try to speak a little bit about the Chavtz of the Dal Minim first. It's just the basic halachas to be aware of when choosing Dal Minim. Then we'll talk a little bit about the Maisa mitzvah, Zmana mitzvah, things of that nature. So the Torah identifies four different minim, but it's kind of hard to figure out what those minim are. The Torah speaks about a kav v'chamim pre-Eitz Hadar. So the Gemara in the third parak of Masechet Sukkah identifies this as an esrog. The Gemara has a whole array of different drushes as to how we figured this out. That's an esrog from either Tama Eitz Ketama Pri, or Hadar's a Lashon of Mayim, or Darbi Lana Mishon of Mishon, a whole different slew of drushes from the Tanoim. So the Rambam, in his introduction to Bereshit Mishnayos, is adamant about the fact that this Gemara should not be taken in the sense of that Chazal was sitting around the days of the Tanoim and scratching the head and figuring out, gee, by golly, what should we do this sukkah? Should we take an orange, an apple, a banana, or an esrog, and let's try to figure it out? So the Rambam says that's anyone who knows anything about Toshua Peril, that's ridiculous. Obviously, Chazal had a Maseri Ishri Piyish and Meshra Beinu that an esrog is an esrog, but nevertheless, there are certain Dini HaTorah that even though we have a clear-cut Maseri what they are, part of the Chochmas Hashem is Baruch was to encode these Toshua Mapez into the Toshua Chzab itself. Rambam draws a distinction between categories of halacha that are halacha l'moshe m'sinai in contrast to a perish ha-makubo m'sinai. Those are two different terms that the Rambam, one halacha m'sinai appears in the Gemara, the term perish ha-makubo the Rambam made up. So what is the difference between the two? So the Rambam says, whenever the Chazal used the term halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that means something that has absolutely no remez, no inkling, no mention whatsoever in Toshua B'Chzav. Let's say l'moshe, the Gemara says that tefillin have to be square and tefillin have to be black. So the Gemara calls those dinim halacha l'moshe m'sinai. You will not find any drush anywhere in the Gemara to say, oh, how do you know tefillin have to be black? Because it says shachar over here, it says shachar over there. There's no such drushes. That's pure Toshua B'Chzav, the pure sense, ish v'pish ha'mei shebeinu. A perish ha'mekubu m'sinai means that the Torah says something in Toshua B'Chzav, and it's not clear what it means. Priyatanda could mean an apple, could mean an orange, could mean a banana, could mean a lot of things. So comes the Tereshim Rapeh, explains to us what it is, but not only does HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell Moshe Rabbeinu exactly what it is, he also encoded into the Tereshim Chzav different ways to come to that conclusion. So in theory, if you were stuck on a desert island and you had no Tereshim, you didn't have a Rebbe, you had no idea what an Esrog is, if you really, really understood how to interpret the Toshua B'Chzav properly, you would come to your own conclusion. You would realize that Takan Esrog Priyat Hadar is an Esrog. If you were in a desert island and you had no idea what color to make tefillin, good luck. You would never figure out on your own that it's black. But if you really, really understood Toshua B'Chzav properly, you could figure out, ooh, Hadar is a Remes, Dabi Lono, Hadar is a Lashon Mayim. You could figure out all the Ramazim licked in the Toshua B'Chzav. At the end of the day, it doesn't make much of a difference. At the end of the day, it's a Din Min HaTorah. If a person takes an apple, you're not, you know, I'd say that's clearly not the case. So clearly, Pri Eitz Hadar refers to an Esrog. Each one of the Dalet Minim. The other three Minim are a little bit more easily identifiable. Not 100%, but easily more identifiable than an Esrog. But Lamaisi, it requires all four Minim. So let's see if we can dissect each one of the Minim to understand just the basic halachas that govern them. So the first one, the Pri Eitz Hadar, that it has to be an Esrog. So there is a famous discussion that started in print a couple hundred years ago about what if you have an esrog that was grafted with other fruit, we call a murkav, an esrog murkav. Is that acceptable or not? So there was a whole slew of different tshuvas and discussions for 400 or 500 years about what the status of an esrog murkav is. So it's generally assumed by just about everybody that an esrog murkav is possible. It's not clear why that should be the case. What exactly is the problem with a grafted esrog? So different suggestions are given. They range from that maybe it's a mitzvah b'aveira, because since you're not allowed to graft trees, even goyim are not allowed to graft trees, even a chutzlars are not allowed to graft trees, so maybe that's the reason why an esrog murkav is possible. Others say maybe an esrog murkav is possible because it's like choser, because part of the esrog is missing. It's not 100% esrog. It's 92% esrog, 8% lemon. So maybe that's like you punctured the esrog. You're missing a part of the esrog. So you have a whole array of different reasons that the Achareim give why it's possible. But everyone seems to agree that it's possible. We're just not sure why it's possible. So there was a question that was posed to Reb Chaim. The answer Reb Chaim, if it's so partial that it's possible, how come the Shulchan Aruch doesn't mention it? How come the Gemara doesn't say it? And the Shulchan Aruch doesn't talk about it. So how come the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that an esrog murkav is possible? So Reb Chaim responded, how come the Shulchan Aruch doesn't say that an apple is possible? because the Shulchan Aruch says you have to take an Esrog. So Esrog means an Esrog. So Esrog and Murka is not an Esrog. It's an Esrog / Lemon. It's a hybrid. It's a different min legamri. So it's not considered to be an Esrog. So the Shulchan Aruch doesn't have to bother telling you, lo yitol tapuach, tapuz ve'teina. Those are not Esrogim. So a grafted, half-baked Esrog, half-baked lemon is not considered up yaloch to be an Esrog. So whatever the reason is, whether Reb Chaim Pshat, other Pshatim, Maisa and Esrog and Murkav, we assume Allah is going to be puzzled. How in the world would I know that my Esrog is Murkav and not? So the Acharonim have a whole array of different simanim to try to figure out, try to identify, to see whether the Esrog is Murkav or not. So the problem is that the post can point out the simanim are not absolutely muvhachim. The simanim are not absolutely proof. They're indications. Esrogim ha-murkavim tend to be smoother than Esrog, which are not Murkav. The seeds sometimes tend to be facing different directions, but it's hard to know what the seeds are until you open up the Esrog. You open up the Esrog, it's too late, unless you run an x-ray on the Esrog. So somebody, a few years ago, there was a radiologist, one of my tamidim, so he sent me a picture of he did a CAT scan on Esrog, he did an MRI on Esrog, he did an X-ray on Esrog, every possible test, and he showed you different positioning of the insides of Esrogim, and he made it into a sukkah decoration. So it's a whole beautiful, nice, you know, a laminated poster of all the inner kishkas of an Esrog. So 1 or 2 years I put it up, and afterwards people were asking me so many shahs about it, it got ridiculous, I stopped putting it up. So I put up the easier pictures of like the white rashivas or something, no one asked me questions about that. Okay. So, one of my kids asked me when they were little, they asked me, Abba, what are you doing on the walls of the sukkah? So, like, part of the job. Okay, so back to the story. So it's for this reason that we're pretty convinced that the Esrog Murkav is possible, and we're not 100% sure how to identify the Sibanim properly. So that's why the Poskim all say that you shouldn't really rely on Sibanim, you should really have a Mesorah. You should try to get Esrog from someone who's Yerushimayim, who's telling you that this paradise we know was never grafted, and his father told him this, and his grandfather told him this, and the Rabbanim over the years who have identified that these paradisim are not Murkav. So that's when we buy Esrogim today. So we, no one today would ever think of just not buying an Esrog. You buy an Esrog that has Ashkoch on it, and you hope and pray that Ashkoch is accurate and telling you. So some Esrogim have better yichus than other Esrogim. Usually you pay for the extra yichus, but again, if you trust this particular Ashkocha to eat their food, and they're telling you that the Esrog is not Murkav, so you hope and pray that that's in fact not Murkav. That's what we usually assume today. The most Esrogim today that are on the market are probably okay. Then we have, once we've identified that we have an Esrog, but there are a lot of things that can go wrong with an Esrog. They can disqualify the Esrog. So the Mishnah in Masechet Sukkah speaks about if you have what's called an Esrog HaChoser, if part of the Esrog is chipped away. So that's a big, big problem. So the Esrog is no good. There's a Machlekes Rishonim, why is that? Gemara never explains why that's a problem. So there's a Machlekes Rishonim, what exactly the problem is. So Tosus writes in the beginning of the third pack of Sukkah, that's a Chisorna L'kachtem L'kicha Tomam. The Gemara says in Sukkah, that when you take the Dalam Minim, you have to take all four of the Minim. You can't take three of the Minim, just call it a day. In order to fulfill the mitzvah, you have to have all four of them. Whether you have to have all four together at the same time, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but you have to have all four. It has to be L'kicha Tomam. So Tosfos writes that just as L'kicha Tomam in the Gemara refers to the all four as a unit, so to each one of the units has to be complete. So if you have an Esrog that has a hole in it, so then that's the chisaron of a L'kicha Tomam. That's the Bir HaDavar. That's the chisaron. So other Rishayim said, never heard such a thing. Other Rishayim said, L'kicha Tomam just means you have to have all four in contrast to two out of four, three out of four, one out of four. But within the minimum itself, I have an Esrog, I only have 98% of the Esrog because someone took a bite out of it. So why is it not called L'kicha Tomam? So the Ran writes that the reason why an Esrog HaChoser is possible is because it's lacking Hador. It's like many of the other Psulim again. See about Esrogim that it's missing its beauty. It doesn't look nice. It's got a big hole in the middle of it, so it doesn't look very nice. That's the reason why it's possible. So again, it's not clear why it's possible, but it's clear that it is possible. So Esrog HaChoser is a problem. So you have to be careful with that. You take a look at Esrog. So if you look, it looks like something was chiseled away. It looks like something rubbed away at it. So that's a problem. If the very, very, very just bare outside of it got rubbed away a little bit, the post can assume that's not called the Choser. But if it looks like it fell and a little piece was broken away from it, that's going to be a problem. There are other psulim in terms of Esrog that are not problems of chaser, there are clearly problems of hadar. Mishnayos speak about all kind of different things that can go wrong with an esrog. Let's say it has what's called a chazazis, so it has like some kind of a blister, a pimple or something, you know, it's growing on the esrog, so that could potentially be a problem. The Gemara talks about shidimara, the esrog starts to get discolored, so that could potentially be a problem. So those halachas are all functions of lack of hadar. That's a lack of pre-etz hadar that detracts from the beauty of the esrog. It doesn't say befavorish in the Chumash what is and what is not. That's a little bit questionable. So the Torah kind of leaves it up for us. So some Bisharim say it's like Lamasar Kosavel Chacham to be Kaveya, that the Torah speaks in generalities, that Priyatzod, it's got to be beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. So Chazal and Kaveya, that if it looks like this, that's okay, still pretty enough. If it looks really, really bad, that's really, really bad looking yesterday, that's going to be possible. Once Chazal and Kaveya, those categories, and that's a Dimin HaTorah, that's Lamasar Kosavel Chachamim. Usually we think that the halachas are either clear cut. We think of the world very black and white, that they're dinim derayis and they're dinim derabbanan. And every once in a while, there's this middle category where Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us general categories and left it up to the Chacham to determine what the detail should be. Like some Yishayim say, that's what Melachas Chol HaMoed is. Some Yishayim say, Melachas Chol HaMoed is derabbanan legamrei. And other Yishayim say, B'sorah Kosev L'Chachamim. Means the Torah says that Chol HaMoed should be a day of Bikurkosh, it should be a day of Simcha, it should be a day of Chag, it should be a little bit of, it should be a special day. It's not like Shabbos and Yom Tov where the Torah delineates, you can't do ABCD, you can't do the following 39 or so activities. Chol HaMoed, L'Mesorah Kosev L'Chachamim to be Kaveya. So this is in the spirit of Yom Tov, this is not in the spirit of Yom Tov, it's the traction of Yom Tov, it's the answer to Yom Tov, etc. So it's a different kind of a Torah Shiva Peh. So some Rishonim say that's the same idea what's playing out in terms of the Dalaminim, that the Torah doesn't say black and white. A pimple this size in this place is possible. The Torah says hadar. So when Chazal convey that this is a little bit too lacking of hadar, that becomes a problem even on the level of their eyes. If he didn't, that's no longer considered to be hadar. So one of the klolim that the Gemara tells us when you have these kind of psulim and an esrog, like either chazozus or shirimara, those kinds of things, is it depends where that psul is. If the psul is on the bottom of the esrog, that's less problematic than if it's on the top of the esrog. Why is that? Because those eyes tend to go towards the top. When you look at something, so you're just naturally, you gravitate to look at the top of the item that's in front of you. So if you have a chazazis or a shirimari, even a small amount on the top of the esrog, that's going to be a problem. If it's towards the bottom, not at the top third of the esrog, it's towards the bottom of the esrog, so then if it's in a lot of places, that's going to be a problem. Or if it's a row over the bottom, that's going to be a problem. There's just a little spot here and there, so it's not so dramatic, it's not so, doesn't catch your attention so much, so then technically it's going to be kosher. So because so much of this psul depends upon the fear of osa inayim, that's what the person can point out. Let's say it's a very, very small chazazis, a very, very small shirimara, but the person barely catches, you're standing there, staring at it for 20 minutes, and you'll see it. But if you're just holding the esrog, like you're shaking a little bit esrog, you're holding it, and you don't really see anything until you start staring at it, so that we assume is kosher. We assume that that's not considered to be a chisar of hadar. Since again, it's not like objectively psul. These things are possible because they're detracting from the beauty of the esrog. So chazal b'shayer, that if it's in the top of the esrog, that's more of a detraction. If it's something that's visible to the naked eye at a normal visual presentation, so that's considered to be a problem. If it's something very, very small, so that would impose a problem. Even though technically speaking, the halacha speaks about shirimara, so it's not always clear what's called the shirimara, what exactly is considered to be a different color of the esrog. So there's a big, big question in the Gemara and the Rishonim about the color green. Is green considered to be a problematic color in terms of esrog or not? So most of the poskim assume, the minhag ha'olam is to assume that green is not really considered to be a shirimara. That's considered to be a normal, natural color of the esrog, it's just not quite ripened. The problem is that if it's mamish green, that it hasn't ripened at all, that's a problem. That's what the Gemara says. It's not nigmar pri yet. That's a problem. So most people follow the practice that an esrog, which is in the process of turning yellow, because it's a little bit yellow already, it's not fully yellow, it still has some greenish tinges to it, but it's kind of started already, the process of turning yellow. So most people follow the practice that that's okay. It's not really a shirimara issue, it's just an issue of gemar pri, and it's on the way already, it's ready ripening. If it's babish, a very, very dark, deep, dark green, that's nowhere near the process of ripening, so then that would be a problem. And there are others who are machmer. There's a Mishnah Yaakov, there's a famous Chumrah, there's a Ritvore, there's a Mishnah, he say this, that maybe green is considered to be a Shinimara. If it's a Shinimara, that's a whole other problem. That's a huge problem. Even the smallest amount of green spots could potentially disqualify the Esrog. So there are some a machmer for that. Some a machmer only get an absolute 100% yellow Esrog, and others are, most people in the world are more makel, that they don't assume that that's considered to be a Shinimara. One has to be careful. If you're machmer for that cheat, you can sometimes end up costing yourself trouble, because sometimes people look for very, very yellow Esrog, but if it's very, very yellow, it's totally, totally yellow, and it's already been yellow for some time, then it's already on the way towards rotting, and then by the time Hashanah Rabbah rolls around, it's going to be brown. So we have to just be careful about that. If the Esrog, sometimes the Esrogim develop like a little bit of coloring from your hands. If you play around with the esrog too long, so if it's the acid on your hands, I don't know, whatever, the grease in you, whatever it is, can sometimes begin to discolor the esrog a little bit also. So that's a question. Does that really matter? It's basically in the yellow esrog, so that's different approaches to how serious we take the Shinimara story. One of the maros that are problematic in an esrog is black. I mean, an esrog that has mamish black marks on it. So again, if it's at the top of the esrog, that could pose a huge problem. So that's what a lot of people start looking for. They're looking at an esrog, and they're looking at that, Gavalt, it's got a black dot, Gavalt, it's got a black dot, Gavalt, it's got a black dot. So the truth is that all the Esrogim have black dots. 99.9% of them have black dots. Where do those dots come from? So either the dirt, it's most of the time the dirt, or sometimes it could possibly be caused by something that was pressing against it, they made a little bit of a mark or something, but those kinds of things that are not really the Esrog itself rotting, not really the Esrog itself deteriorating, so we usually assume that that's okay. I think the Olam, 99% of Klal Yisrael would not be Yotzei, the Mitzvah of Dal Aminim, we were Machmer on that. So it's generally assumed that these things are probably very dirt. If you look at them hard enough, you'll see that most of the time they look like dirt. I remember I was once at an Esrog orchard with this, it was during the Shemitah year, this goes back, I think it was already two Shemitahs ago. I took a bunch of Bachurim to Yisrael during Shemitah to watch and see how they do all the, it's amazing, all the kind of stuff. So we went to an Esrog orchard and we met with this old Sephardi fellow, I remember his name was Yaakov. He's the kind of guy who, like, his father was raising Esrogim. Since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, he's pretty much been raising Esrogim. And he was very proud of his Esrogim. And remember, I asked him about the black dots, and he's laughing off totally. He said, "Ah, that's they all have black. They're all have dirt on them." So he wasn't too excited about that. Somebody else asked him why the price for Esrogim was so high. That somehow he didn't have the right answer for that. I wasn't sure exactly what the answer to that was, but he wasn't too excited about some of the black dots. So the Esrogim, some communities, some people are very, very machmir. They won't get Esrogim. Perfectly, perfectly clean, and whatever. Most other people are not, don't look so carefully. As clean as you can get it. One of the famous shailas about something can go wrong with an esrog is the pitum falls off. So the Mishnah talks about that. And we assume la halacha that the pitum falling off is a problem. What is it a problem? Says machlekes rishonim, whether it's a problem of hadra, a problem of chaser, assuming that chaser is an independent psul. So that's a big shaila. So if the first day it doesn't make a difference, we'll see. Hopefully we'll talk a little bit later on today or next week about some of the dinim of dal minim change a little bit after the first day. So that a chap nafkamin is whether the pitum falls off or not after the first day. But on the first day, for sure, one should use it without a pitum. If the pitum broke off, but still part of the stem is still there. Like sometimes if you drop pitums, or sometimes just a tippy top will fall off, but there's still a little bit of the wooden part protruding above the top of the esrog, and sometimes the whole thing will break into the esrog proper. So if it didn't break into the esrog proper, ikra din is probably okay. Ikra din is not even really called the pitum falling off. So again, some machmer in that, but ikra din, as long as the part of the pitum is still intact, so technically that would be okay. The poskim write that the medvar murim that an esrog without a pitum is a problem. That's an esrog that had a pitum, but an esrog never had a pitum, so then that's not a problem altogether. We never had a pitum. Of course, they had a pitum at one time. It's impossible to grow without. That's where the fruit gets pollinated from. So if it never had a pitum at all, it's never going to become a fruit. So the teretz is that it had it very, very, very early on. It kind of just fell off before it ever developed as a real formal pitum. So when the poskim used that lasha on that, it didn't have a pitum, that means it never really had a full-fledged pitum. Of course, from day one, it had a little something, but then it never really developed. So some kind of esrogim, for some reason, Hakadosh Baruch Hu made different esrogim, develop differently. Some develop with mamash a full-fledged pitum, and some, the pitum falls off in a very, very early stage of the development. But if it fell off so early on that the esrog grew around it, and it doesn't have that lacking, you know, that literally look of lacking a pitta. So we assume that that's perfectly okay. Some people prefer those as regular, and they don't have to worry about dropping the esrog. And other people like pitta looks more, that's the more, you know, traditional look, esrog with the pitta on. Anyway, yesh for yesh. Okay. There are different idurim that people look for in terms of the shape of the esrog. None of that is really ma'akev. There, you know, there's a lechilutik shape. It should have that, you know, that wide at the bottom, and it comes up a little bit symmetrical or something. So those are, again, those are nice idurim, depending on what you want. Some people like esrog with a gartel, without a gartel. Some have that, you know, that little wedge, you know, in the middle of something. So if you daven with a gartel, so you have an esrog gartel, then a gartel, whatever. Those are already above and beyond that discussion right now. The esrog is pretty clean, you know, it's clean and it's not chipped away from. If it's going to fall off, that's not a murkav, so you're good to go. So you have yourself a kosher esrog. Okay, good. So let's move on a little bit to some of the details about an esrog, which are not about the chefta per se in the sense of what it physically looks at, rather what halachically looks like. So the Mishnah tells us that the esrog cannot be from Orla. The Esrog Shal Orla, that's a problem. Why exactly is that a problem? So that's a big machlekes in Rishonim. Some Rishonim say because once it's Asa Bano, that's not called Lachem. There's a famous Raivin in the third, Rav of Sukkah, that says that whenever something is Asa Bano, so by definition it's not called Lachem. And then we'll see, now it doesn't have to belong to you. So the Ritva disagrees with that Raivin and says there's no such Shalom, because it's not, just because it's not, you can't use it, doesn't mean it's not lachem. The reason why you can't be yaitzeh is because it's emid l'sreifa. It's kesuse mechteshure. An esrog has a certain size to it. The machlekes that tell them what the size is, we pass it's kebeitza, one time it says keegos. So it has to be a certain size. So whenever something's emid l'sreifa, so it's kesuse mechteshure. It's as if it's already been burnt, and therefore the shear is chasim. Those are learning sechas gittin, so the famous rat about that topic in gittin of chaf about when we do a plexus of extra, when we don't. The Gemara says you can write again in a davar osav anah. So the Ran raises the question, when he says ksus of extra shiur, so the Ran says, the ksus of extra shiur makes sense when this halacha requires a shiur. There is no shiur to the size of a get. You can write again on a tiny piece of paper, you can write again on a big piece of paper. As long as you have room to write the letters, it could be this big, it could be this big. So you only say ksus of extra shiur when you have a davar that's torn a shiur. So an esrog is torn a shiur, so that's why there's a problem. So no matter how you slice it, with the Ravid, the Ritva, the Maisa, the Mishnah, the Beferish, that an esrog shall oil is possible. So it was a big machlokes apoiskim about what about orla's chutzlaretz. So the Mishnah says in Maseches Kedushin that the dinim of orla apply in chutzlaretz as well. So we assume that's halacha mashir. It's machlokes the Gemara. We paskin it's halacha mashir b'sid that orla applies in chutzlaretz. So the Magen Avraham raises the question. Let's say I'm growing an esrog tree in California, growing an esrog tree in South Carolina. So I want to know, do I have to be concerned with an esrog shel orla? So Magen Avraham says no. Magen Avraham says that an esrog shel orla's chutzlaretz would be okay. Why is that? Because the Gemara says in Maseches Kedushin that there was a special halacha Moshe Mesinai that Safek Orla's Chutzlaretz is mutter. And not only is Safek mutter, but as long as you don't have Yediyah that it's Orla, it's also mutter. So let's say I'm growing a tree in Chutzlaretz, and I know that it's Orla's tree. Forget an Esrog. I'm growing an apple tree. I know that is the first 3 years of the fruit. So it's also been a term for me to eat it. That's halacha Moshe Mesinai. I'm not allowed to eat that fruit, but I'm allowed to give it to you. I'm allowed to give it to you, the Gemara says. Why? Because you don't have any Yediyah. You don't know that it's Orla. So it's a special halacha Moshe Mesinai that calls by. You don't have your DSA sir, so it's going to be mutter. So the Magen Avraham says, so even though I know that this is Orla, but you can't say it's really also Bahano'a. You can't really say that it's told Sereifa. I'll give it to another guy. So it's not going to be Osman or him. It's not going to be told Sereifa. So how can you say that that's a problem? How can you say that an Esrog or Chutzlar should be a problem? That's how the Mishnah Berurah quotes this Magen Avraham. If you happen to have an Esrog tree in Chutzlar, so you don't have to worry about the Dinim of Orla. So other posts can raise a question of that it's not 100% clear that we pass like that Gemara condition. The Gemara has that funny din that I can give Orla's Chutzlar to somebody else. So there's a Kesavishna, then there's a Sheikh Schweitzer, and everyone pilpers about whether that Gemara was really halacha. Maybe it's a machlokes in the Gemara, maybe we don't pass like that Gemara. So that's a question. So halacha ma'is, if you happen to have an Orla tree in Chutzlar, maybe it's better not to use it for an Esrog. It's not clear. It's probably the similar Shaila they talk about. Can you recite Birchas Ilonos on a tree within the first 3 years? So some Achareim said you can't recite Birchas Ilonos because you say the Nusach and Birchas Ilonos Lohanus Ben B'nei Adam, and the fruit is Asabana. So if it's Asabana, I can't say Lohanus Ben B'nei Adam. So other Achareim say that's a joke. Other Achareim say, I'm not praising the Baruch Hu for this tree. I'm praising the Baruch Hu for Lohanus Ben B'nei Adam, but I'm going to eat this fruit. I'm not going to eat these apple trees. That's not even my apples. I'm not going to go steal the apples. I'm never going to eat the apples from this tree. It doesn't matter. Lohanus Ben B'nei Adam is also valid. But according to those Achareim, we say that Lohanus Ben B'nei Adam is Pshuta Kemashmo. Chol going on this tree. So some Achraim raised a question: Can you recite Birchas Ilanos on an Orla within the first 3 years? So within those Achraim, there's a further Shaila: what if it's Orla's Chutzlort? So I had the Shaila once on my block. There was a fellow who had a tree that was an Orla tree. So he asked me, can you recite Birchas Ilanos on the Orla tree? So it depends on what you hold about this Esrog story. So if you hold like the Magen Avraham and Chustal and Minim that you can use an Esrog Shal Orla's Chutzlort, but it's basically Mutabanot. Mutabanot for somebody else. So that's okay. So then you can make the bracha on Bnei Adam, because Bnei Adam could be nana from it. The people don't know that at all. It could be nana from it. But if you hold like the Kesemishl, like the Sheshmites, that we don't pass like that Gemara, that once it's all the Chutzlort, it's also not to everybody, so then maybe you can't recite the bracha. So this din that you can't use as an esrog something which is asur biachila, this has other ramifications as well. So let's say, for example, if you have an esrog shel tevel, so proper tumas and maisos weren't taken off of, so that's also no good. It's also a problem. And could be that that's related to this halacha. Even though tevel is not really asav hana, but tevel is not royal achila right now. Kolzman, you have been mafer, so you're not allowed to eat it. So that may also be the reason why it's a problem. So an esrog shel tevel is also a problem. We have a fascinating historical record of this din being implemented. If I'm not mistaken, I think it's in the Bar Kokhba letters. There was some letter or something that was sent to. They needed a daladinim to be sent to the battlefront, so they sent themselves a message. Somebody dug up some letter that said they sent a message to somebody saying that please send us a bunch of Israelim for the soldiers, and please make sure to be mafresh to proper Jews and Isis. Before he said, we don't have time now. We're fight a battle. Make sure that all the Jews and Isis have been separated properly before the Israelim were brought. So we have such an archaeological. I find every once in a while you find some interesting tidbit of something dug up in the ground that indicates that people observe Torah mitzvahs in days before. Not that we had any suffering that they observed Torah mitzvahs, but it's always nice to see that what appears in the Mishnah, so it was actually put into practice at this time. There's a famous letter that was not even a Jewish source. There's a famous letter from the letters of Elephantine. Elephantine was a Greek colony or something back. You're talking about 2,000 years ago. So there was a Jewish community in that in this place. I think it was off the coast of Africa somewhere. It was some island. That there was a Jewish community there, and there were Jewish soldiers that were stationed as part of the Greek army. The Jewish soldiers, like the American army, the Jewish soldiers fighting in the Greek army. They weren't fighting against the Hashmonah. They were fighting whatever they were fighting. So there was a group of soldiers. So there's actually a letter that was found that with a request from a whole group of Jewish soldiers to the Greek commanders, if in the middle of the springtime, for 1 week, if they could be provided with some other kind of food besides bread, that they asked specifically for the week of Pesach. It doesn't say Pesach, it says in the middle of April, whatever it was, if they could please be provided with, I don't know, with the potato starch, whatever, non-gebrachs, whatever they ask for at the time, that they shouldn't have the regular bread for that week. So it's just a beautiful thing. You see, there you are, Jewish soldiers, we don't know who in the world they were. They were well over 2,000 years ago, and they were observing the dinim of chametz like we would expect. So that letter is actually can be found. The original letter is found in Berlin. It's in the museum in Berlin. So a couple of years ago, I was in Berlin with Rabbi Shechter. We went to go say shiurim and the yeshiva there together. So one afternoon, they wanted to take us some touring, so they took us to this museum in Berlin. So I was with Rabbi Shechter, and we were sitting and reading the letters written in Greek, but they have the translation. So the whole story. So I was like so fascinated with the letter. I knew about it before, but I heard about it years before. But I was fascinated to see this letter. So Rabbi Shechter wasn't so fascinated. He said, "Yeah, so Jews observe Pesach 2,000 years ago. Yeah, we know that." And he said, "What else is new? So Jews didn't need bread 2,000 years ago in Pesach." I thought it was like an unbelievable, like fascinating thing. He wasn't as responsible. Okay, whatever it is. Back to this story. So this din, when you have an esrog that's not royal achila, so this raised a big, big red flag in terms of Shemitah. So this was part of the shot of this past Sukkot. So there was a big tumult right after 1948, right after the state was declared, and then they started to export esrogim to Chutz Laaretz. So it was a huge issue that came up, I think, in the early 1950s, whenever you make the calculation when the first Shemitah was. There was a big issue that came up that the Esregin that were being exported to Chutz Laaretz, they were all from Esregi Shemitah. They were all from Esregim that were relying upon the Het Mechira. In those days, a lot of people were relying, more people than now, were relying on the Het Mechira. And all the Esregim were coming to America, at least many of the Esregim, were coming from fields that had not observed the Din of Shemitah. They had just simply circumvented the Shemitah by selling off all the land to the Goyim. So the Shaila became, let's say, if you want to rely on the Mechira, so you rely on the Mechira. But if you don't want to rely on the Mechira, is there anything wrong with those Esrogim? So one of the red flags that was raised about these Esrogim is that these Esrogim, since they weren't observed Shemitah properly, all the Pardesim, all the orchards were locked up, they were fenced up, they were gated up. That's a violation of Meshumah. You're not allowed to do that in Shemitah. Whenever you have Perish Shviyas, so you have to leave it Hefker. Again, if you think there's no Perish Shviyas yet because it all belongs to Goyim, okay, so you rely on the Hetta. But if you don't want to rely on the Mechira, so even though I'm not a farmer, but now I have a fruit in front of me that was Minam Meshumah, that the dinim of Hefker were violated. So does that have any ramifications, Allah? Are there any consequences, Allah? That's a big machlekes that we share in the end of Maseches Yevam. It's about, if I violated the dinim of Hefker, I wasn't mafkir my fruit. I gated it up, I locked it up, and I didn't let anybody else come in. So does that have any impact on the fruit? So some Rishonim hold that the fruit becomes also. That's based on a Torah's Kohanim, that it's called Minam Meshumah, and the fruit becomes also Biachila. Another Rishonim say, Rash has never heard such a thing. Rechli's Rash Rebbeinu Tam, the end of Maseches Yevam, Rash has never heard such a thing. And Rebbeinu Tam says, no, it's a Torah's Kohanim. It says, get in the Torah's Kohanim. So Rash had a different understanding of what the Torah's Kohanim meant. So that's a big machlekes. The whole Machlekes, Ariyam Azeh, that's a big machlekes. That machlekes plays out, forget about it, that plays out for an Eretz Yisrael today. Let's say you go into a store and you want to buy an apple during the Shemitah year. So if you rely on that Mechira, so it's had the Mechira, so you rely on it, finish. But if you don't want to rely on that Mechira, can you still buy the apple? If you want to buy the potatoes, you want to buy the carrots, that's a problem. That's Svichen. Any vegetables that are planted every year, so that's a problem. But the apples are grown on an apple tree from 100 years ago. So can I buy an apple? That's good to Shemitah, so good to Zosai. So if it came from a Het Mechira field and I don't want to rely on that Mechira, so Lamaisa, this apple was Minam Meshumah. So is that a problem? Is there any consequences of that? So that's a big machlekes. Rishonim says machlekes out of Yemen and Eretz Yisrael. Is that a problem? Even those who don't want to learn that Mechira, can they be the Yevid by the fruit? Because worst case scenario, so it's Minam Meshumah. So that was a big question. So at the time when this happened, so there was some Rabbanim in America who possibly all the Esrogim come from Eretz Yisrael. They said you can't use any of these Esrogim because they're all Minam Meshumah, and as Minam Meshumah, so they're not Roy Lachila. According to Ben Tam, they're not Roy Lachila. It's like an Esrog. It's not Eibah et Rechila, and you're not Yait to the Mitzvah. That was at the time, some Rabbanim had that psak. So Rav Moshe at the time thought that was not correct. So Rav Moshe wrote a tshuva where Rav Moshe claimed that we don't even pass Kibbutz Mashum. So that's Yochanan Mishael. We pass that it's not a problem altogether. Then the Rav went even further, Rav Moshe. The Rav said, even according to Rishon, we say Mashum is a problem. The Rav thought that Mashum doesn't create that kind of an Issachevtsub. So it's not the same as Issachevtsub, whatever it was. So there was Machlegis ben Akotz al Akotz in America. Man, again, this is 70 years ago. When Akotzel Akotzel, all the Esrogim that have come from Eretz Yisrael and Motzoi Shnasa Shemitah, not in the 70th year itself. All the ones that grew in the 70th year, they're coming at the beginning of the 8th year. Are they problematic with the Evid? So some were Machmer and Ramesh and the Rav were Mekel. In the later generations, in the last 60, 70 years, so the situation has changed significantly. That all the Esrogim that are coming from Eretz Yisrael today for the Shnasa Shemitah are all coming from Eitz Beis, and they're not really Minim Shumah. That was the whole game. It's not Shemitah Shir right now, but the goal was to create a model where it's not going to be a garden. You're not going to have any shilas whatsoever. So back in the olden days when they were coming from Het Mechira fruit, so Rav Moshe was presented with another shaila. He said, "How are you going to buy the fruit? How are you going to buy the yesrik? Because you're not allowed to do business with Perish Shvias. That's one of the Isurim, the Ochlam Lo L'Schayra. So Bishlam, the merchant, so he's not asking the shaila. He's relying on Het Mechira. But I live in Lori side. I don't want to rely on that. What do I have to rely on Het Mechira for? So can I go to the yesrik salesman? I go to the store and I'll buy an yesrik. So aren't I in violation of Ochlam Lo L'Schayra? So Rav Moshe has two chidushim. So Rav Moshe claims, he wasn't the first one to say either of these chidushim, but he writes them both in the tshuva. He writes that the yisur l'schayra, Rav Moshe said he thinks it's only on the meich and not on the lekech. It's not that the meich is schayra also. The yisur is to make profit off of Be'er Shviya, so that yisur is on the meich and not on you. So then Rav Moshe says, I was lifting iver. When I buy the yisur from him, so I'm facilitating his aveira. So Moshe, that's not called facilitating aveira, that's called lifting iver. He thinks what he's doing is mutter. His rabbi told him that it's mutter. So lifting iver means I can't give you chazer. But let's say it's not chazer. It's something that's a machlokes, whether it's also a mutter. You happen to have a psach that it's mutter, and I have a psach that it's also. So Ramesh says, there's no shneiver. I'm not being machshu you in anything. So lefi devar of it's mutter. So Ramesh said that any time, it's a very important shuva, Ramesh, for other applications, any time someone's involving themselves in an action, that there are some opinions that maintain that's mutter. His rabbi told him that's mutter. That's not my problem with shneiver anymore. So then Ramesh adds on, he says, what if he never asked the rabbi? Doesn't even know. But if he would have asked the rabbi would have told him it's mutter. If he would have asked the rabbi, no, Rabbi Rush would have told him that's mutter. So he didn't. He doesn't know anything, the guy. He's just selling his argument this year. But if he would have asked the legitimate rabbi, even though you may not follow it, Ramosha is not siding one with it. Ramosha is not telling you what his position on that mechira is. So Ramosha is saying that even Lefi, those who don't want to run that mechira, he doesn't think there's anything wrong with buying the Israelim because there's no problem in Mashum or Mikra, then we hold it, that's okay. And there's no problem with favor, and the assist chayr is not on you, so a lot of there's not that much to worry about. So you can have other issues. You're going to pay cash for them. You pay cash, the money's going to be nitfas to pay for shvi. It's okay, so you avoid that. You won't pay for cash. You'll give it a matana, give it a matana. Those sukkahs in the end of the third regular sukkah. How do you go about purchasing an esu shvias without running into problems of the money becoming nitfas to do shvias? So you have to learn the third regular sukkah to figure out what the answer to that is. But be karon, Ramosh said you can even buy this regular shvita. So Baruch Hashem today, so things are much, much better than we don't have. They're not really coming from Het Mechiri. They're all coming from Eitz Beisdin. If you accept the Eitz Beisdin, you accept it. So some people don't want to be bothered with this regular shmita because some people maybe don't trust the Yotze Beis Din, and some don't want to be bothered about what's called beer after Sukkot is over. So you have to be mevayer per shvius. So the right time for beer is on Tu B'Shvat. So they don't want to be bothered taking the fruit outside, being mevayer it. If beers were supposed to happen in Eretz Yisrael, the fruit weren't even supposed to be brought to Chutzlars in the first place. So some people don't like to buy a regular shmita. They like to buy a Moroccan regular during the Shnasa Shmita, and others they don't. We'll buy them. Let's support our fellow farmers. Eretz Yisrael, Matayv Manoim, or life food of Eretz Yisrael. This wasn't planned to be a Yom HaTzimut, just happens to coincidentally. So others will say, no, we'll buy the Esrege Shemitah, and we'll figure out how to deal with it. So we'll figure out how to pay for it, and we'll figure out how to dispose of it afterwards. Figure out how to work around. So this past year, so I wanted to try to get Esrege. I always like to get Esrege Eretz Yisrael, so I was planning on getting that also. But I wasn't 100% sure that I was different places where I go. Some places they don't have. Some places don't want to be bothered with it. They just get miserable. Moroccan stuff in short. So I was a little bit nervous to wait for the last minute. So what I did was, there to for Yom Kippur. So I bought just two Moroccan Esrege for myself and my son. Just I knew that we should have, I didn't buy the most, but decent Moroccan Esrege. That way, just in case my plan fails, at least we'll have our two Esrege. And then when we got closer to Sukkot, and Rosh Hashanah, my Metzliach was able to get two very, very nice Eretz Yisrael Esrege. So I bought those also. So we had two extra Esrege in the house. So my wife was very happy about that because every year on Sukkot, so when I take the Lulav Esrog and I'm davening, and sometimes she wants to say hello before and something, so she always has to wait until I finish with the Esrog, and also about God. So here we're very progressive in our family. I gave her, and whenever you buy an Esrog, you get a free Lulav and Hadassah and Ravazot. So I gave her, she had her own set, she had her own Dalmin this year. She was all proud of herself. So she walked around Shul with it, but I'm sitting in the kitchen, so she had her own Dalmin, and she had the Mirach. And it's got next year, she liked it too much this year. I'm going to have to buy another set next year. So she had a very beautiful Moroccan Esrog. So in our Shul on Simple Story Night, so we always auction off different things. So one of the things we always auction off is the rabbi's esrog. People spend thousands of dollars to get my esrog. Why? They want to turn to esrog jelly, into esrog liquor, whatever they want to do with it. So every year they auction off esrog. So this year I announced that my esrog is not for sale this year, because first of all, it's a big shiloh. You're allowed to even make it into gel, make it into liquor. It's a master pair of shvias, it's complicated. And there are beer issues, and maybe that's called tzchayra. The shul's making $1,000. I said, this year, the esrog is not for sale. This year, my esrog went back there to Israel. I brought it back. I went there to Israel right after Sukkot or something. So I brought my esrog back, left it with my brother-in-law there to Israel. I called him to Bishvat. I wanted to do hefker on it, I wanted to do beer on it. I wanted to do it with FaceTime, because I'm a machmi, I should do it. Mamish the pal pet to the day on him. So I was all ready to do it, which he informed me that the esrog had so deteriorated, so shriveled up, this mamish wasn't real achila b'chlal. So there's nothing left to it. So I told him, so put it in the bathroom, throw it into the garbage. There's no mitzvah rimafka, it's not real achila anymore. So that was the end of that grandiose plan. But on Simchas Torah night, so I said, we're not doing, so the Gaboyim were very upset. I just cost the shul $1,000, whatever they make. So I said, this year we're going to do it differently. We're a very progressive shul. We auctioned off the Rebbetzin's esrog. That was it. Only shul in the world. So somebody gave a couple hundred dollars to get my wife. They never picked it up. They never came for it. So it shriveled the shul by a few months later, threw it in the garbage. So Mekhata, and the shul made a few bucks out of it. The guy never picked up the Hilly Rebbe. Okay. Good. Anyway, back to our the lighter side of Dalamin. Okay. So back to our story. So at the rate that we're going, we gave 1 week to Esra. We got to give time to Lulav, so we'll get Lulav started. We don't have too many weeks, so we'll try to give a little bit of time to Lulav. So Kapos Tamarim, so the Torah says you have to Kapos Tamarim. So even though Kapos is Lashon Rabim, since it's written the Lashon Yochanan, and Sefer Torah, it's without a vav. We would have a vav with the Sefer Torah would be possible. So Kapos Ksiv, so the Torah Shabbat explains that it's just one Lulav, that's it. So what are some of the dinim that govern a Lulav? So the opening Mishnah in the third panel of Sukkah says Lulav Yavish is possible. It's a dried out Lulav, that's a problem. Why exactly is that a problem? So it's a big machlokes Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi says it's possible because they're keli ganvehu. So a lack of hidden mitzvah. So Rashi sounds like it's not a unique din to dalam minim. It's a general din. If it looks miserable, so it's possible. So Tosfos writes that's not true. Tosfos writes that dinim that are derived from zekeli ganvehu never possible with the evit. Zekeli ganvehu is only lechetchila. So why is this possible? Because hodr. But it doesn't say the lulav is hadr. It says the yesruk is hadr. No, it's a hekesh, based on a gemara later on, third book of Sukkah, that Chazal compared the dinim of lulav to the dinim of esruk. So, very long the shemachlik is. When you learn the lulav agozel, so you spend the first week in this machlik's Rashi and Tosfos. How come Rashi assumed that some are hid the mitzvah of kol tarkula is the posel? And is that true? Is it really a psul b'dievet? And the Mishnah says it is possible, so it sounds like it is a psul b'dievet. And Tosfos says it can't be the pshat. It must be a din prati. So is it a din klali like Rashi, a din prati like Tosfos? But the Ma'aseh is possible. The bottom line is the Lulav Yavish is possible. So Tosfos raised the question, how Yavish is Yavish? So Tosfos starts searching in different shurim and halachas, and chazmumim, and chazab ha'zarg, and half dozen and Ma'amar Kermes and Bekiyas as to what the word Yavish means in other areas of halacha. In the end, Tais is not really sure what the shear is. So there are different opinions and the Rishonim what the shear is. So the we paskin that the Ikmigra did, the real shear, is when it's lost its entire color, lost its total greenness. Kozban, it's still a little bit green, so then that's not Yavish. But you leave a lula from year to year, so you'll see what it looks like when you take the lula branches to burn in Erev Pesach. So it's totally white. Megami lost its greenness. So the Ran, the Rishonim quote a Ravid, the Ran, the Raman, they quote a Ravid that says that where the shear of the greenness come from? So there's a Rishalmi that says that the lula smachta. The Rishalmi says you can't use a lula yavish. Lo amesim haluka. It's like it's dead. So the Ravid says that since Chazal and the Rishalmi compare a dry lulav to a dead lulav, so he says, Chmar Lutzan, how do you know you see a person? How does you walk the room and you see a patient is dead? How do you know the first patient is dead? So the first thing, they look and see the color right away. So again, if a person is attuned to that, so a doctor, someone who sees nebuch, that people often, so they probably won't even have to take his pulse. They'll take one look, they'll see the person lost all the color of the gamma, they'll see that he's ready kames. So that's what the Ravid writes, that when the way to be Mishaya, whether the lulav is dead or not, is look at the color of the lulav, it's so white, the gamma lost all its grease, all its freshness, so that's the shear. That's how we generally assume halacha. The Ramah quotes that there was a practice in Europe that they used to use last year's lulav, because they possibly couldn't get lulav. So the Dalaminim was a very hard mitzvah to do in Eastern Europe. It was an impossible mitzvah to do. Estragum didn't grow in Europe. Nothing grows in Poland. There's only one thing that grows in Poland. Anyone know what? What grows in Poland? Potatoes. That's why. Why do potatoes grow in Poland? Because they grow under the ground. So it takes like 2 weeks for the potato to grow, whatever it is. And for the 2 weeks that it's warm in Poland, and they're in the middle of July, whatever. That's it. That's the entire potato season. So there's a reason why everything in Ashkenazi tradition, everything is potatoes. You have potatoes in achol, potatoes in akugel, potatoes in a potatoes. Everything we have is potato latkes. Everything is potatoes because bulb. There's a famous Yiddish song: Zontik bulb is Monday bulb. That's the only thing that grew. The only one or two other things that grew in Eastern Europe were also things that grew under the ground. Carrots grew in Eastern Europe, and beets grew in Eastern Europe. And onions grew in Eastern Europe. That's why everything in Ashkenazi is either potatoes, carrots, beets, or onions. That's the only thing that grew. So to get an Esra to grow in Poland is not going to work. So they had to import this regim from Italy and from other places in order to have this regim. We'll love them also. You ever see a palm tree growing in Warsaw? So palm trees grow in California. They grow in Florida. They don't grow in Warsaw. So they used to have to import this regim. So that's it. The only thing that grew in Poland, Aravis. Aravis grow in cold climates. So it was very, very hard to get down. There are more rights that was a practice in Eastern Europe. They would reuse the same lulav from year to year. So there are more rights. It's dry. Yavesh kakeitz. It's so dry. So there are more rights. There's one day in Rishem that says that the Taisus quotes the possibility that as long as you touch it and it doesn't fall apart in your hand, if it's so brittle that the minute you touch it, it breaks, cracks apart, that's yavish. Anything short of that is not yavish. The Ramah writes, what do you do? It's a shasafach. They had no choice. They used to use these very, very old lulavim. Because very often they couldn't even get a new lulav. They would save last year's lulavim in case they couldn't get new lulavim this year. Baruch Hashem, Ach Shadar, that we have a much more easily available lulavim. So we have these beautiful, beautiful lulavim. You buy a lulavim for $100. So if you buy a fancy espion, a fancy lulav, fancy arovas, fancy adasim, it costs you $500, you send a dalamin. So Baruch Hashem, we have beautiful, beautiful lulavim, so we don't have to rely on these akulas anymore. So hopefully, Mitzvah, next week, we'll try to see about some of the other shiles that come up in Hilchas Lulav and we'll branch out, no pun intended, to the other the other dalamin that wasn't planned. Okay, good. We'll stop here. How many weeks do we have on the schedule after this week?